Okay, move out.
You're listening to the Valor Podcast with Nick Lehman, a show highlighting the people who defend the United States of America and those who support them.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Hello and welcome to the Valor Podcast. I am Nick Lehman. Do you ever travel on road trips or even across town with your buddies or your significant other and all of a sudden you're like, shh, 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 quiet, quiet. The song's on and you just blare it. And by the end of that song, you are blaring the lyrics. Everybody has their own little parts and ensembles and things like that. And you're just fired up at the end of that. Well, there's going to be a song that we're going to talk about in the show later on that's veteran related. So, you know, I know that intro kind of seems all over the board, but trust me, the car karaoke is going to be a crucial part of this veteran podcast. So I want to first thank the Comfort Inn & Suites in Gallup, New Mexico for being a show sponsor. They were awarded one of the most patriotic small towns in America. It is a great town to go to. It's one of those old Route 66 towns, but also that hotel that Ken and the guys run over there is phenomenal. They have a veteran-themed lobby with all kinds of different eras from all the way ranging from World War I to the current conflicts, the global war on terror and all that. So, and you never know who you're going to see in the lobby because of military fame. And I've met a couple, three or four Medal of Honor recipients within that lobby. So if you're tired and your car karaoke voice can take no more, go stay at the Comfort Inn Suites in Gallup and they'll definitely take care of you. So I want to transition to our guest. Our guest is former Black Hawk U.S. Army helicopter pilot, Chief Warrant Officer 3, Ryan Weaver, who has hung up his flight suit and is transitioning into country music.
I really appreciate you having me on the show, and I know that there are a lot of folks out there that are starting to come on board with the message that we're sending out with the new music video. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, so tell me, take me back to your you know, sort of your Army career, and you're transitioning out. I mean, at what point were you like, you know, I could really give a go at this? I mean, was there a group of guys that were like, hey, Weaver, you're really good at singing?
Well, I didn't start actively singing until flight school in 2000 when I went to learn how to fly helicopters down at Fort Rucker, Alabama. And I was singing karaoke competitions in flight school on the weekends and was actually winning. It was kind of cool to see something that I hadn't really gone out to do or, you know, on an active basis. And then when I started doing it, I fell in love with it. I fell in love with the performance aspect of it. I fell in love with, you know, interacting with the crowd and the singing part of it too, obviously. But when I was in flight school, obviously, you know, that was a few years before I got out of the military. I ended up moving to being restationed to Germany after flight school got done and did some karaoke over there too. And when we were deployed to Iraq, started writing some songs. And then in 2004, on January 8th, just a few days ago, my brother Aaron was flying in the back of a medevac helicopter. We were both deployed there. He was killed in action. And when the medevac helicopter was shot down by an insurgent, and when I came back to the United States and started, I actually got restationed to Fort Rucker where I started singing. When I got restationed back to the United States at Fort Rucker, where I started singing, I realized that life was passing me by and it was something that I loved doing. I started going after it, and I made a promise to myself that if I was going to go after this dream, that I would do it in honor of Aaron's sacrifice for this country. And because of those sacrifices, we are able to chase our dreams in this great country of ours. And that's really when I started going at it full time. I did the Fort Rucker Military Idol Competition. The Army had a military idol competition Army-wide, and I got runner-up, actually, at Fort Rucker. I didn't win it. And when the guy who won it went to do the national championships, Fort Rucker had their 50th anniversary. And I got to open up for Daryl Worley and Tracy Lawrence when they came down for the 50th anniversary. And I met the guys that played in the Fort Rucker Army Band at the time. And they also had gigs that they were playing off post on their free time. And they needed a country music singer to start singing with them because they were doing a lot of classic rock. And of course, if you're in Alabama, you got to sing country music too. And, and that's when I started playing the small bars around in Enterprise and the surrounding area, Dothan, Alabama, and have progressed since then. That's really where this is all taken off from, is at Fort Rucker.
So, I mean, the two-part question is one, I mean, what was your ace in the hole karaoke song that won you the championships? And two, down in the South, I mean, that's, you picture the you know, kind of like the Blues Brothers with the steel, you know, the steel cage, and you're playing behind that. I mean, not to stereotype, but I've seen those bars.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for the carry on the first answer, believe it or not, I have never called myself or considered myself. I'm not a Carrie Underwood. I'm not a Vince Gill. Those are some of the most talented vocalists you're ever going to hear in country music. I'm not a Travis Tritt. I mean, I never claimed to be. The performance for me, it's more of a performance aspect that I think was winning me the songs more than the vocal side of it. And Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy was actually my go-to song to finish, you know, to be, you know, the winner, I guess you would say, in the karaoke competitions and singing competitions. But one of the singing competitions that I did, the biggest one that I did, I got to open up for George Jones as the winning prize, one of three folks that got to, or four folks that got to open up for George Jones. So that was a pretty big honor because he was the first national act. I actually opened up for him, I believe, before I even opened up for Daryl Worley and Tracy Lawrence. So he was the first national act that I ever opened up for quite an honor. But on the second side of it, the second answer to questions, yeah, I mean, I've played some dive bars. I played some shady places, but I've also got to play some amazing places too. So, I mean, getting started off and getting into the business and, you know, as they call it, digging in the trenches or living in the trenches to get yourself where you want to be. And a lot of folks think you just immediately start off in stardom, but there's a lot of work and effort that goes into when you get started. And I played the club scene for probably a year and a half, 2 years. And I gave myself a goal every 6 months, I would move to a larger type of venue. And I started booking myself to larger venues. And then ended up meeting up with a band that was already playing larger venues, and they lost their lead singer, and they brought me on to play with them. And then once I moved on from that band, I started doing the festival scene and opened up for national acts, and was booking myself along the way for all of that. So yeah, I know that's a little bit more of an answer than you were looking for, but that's usually what you're going to get in this story.
heck no, we're friendly podcast people. It's radio. We're not the 30-second soundbite. So I love hearing stories like that. And the crazy thing, I mean, I stumbled upon you. I joked with you that an American Eagle landed on my shoulder and whispered in my ear about your music and all that, but. Yeah. You know, in all honesty, it was through, you know, Facebook and YouTube and all that. The thing I always come back to, and I was just, you know, meditating on it today, is like, you have a crazy story. I mean, you were flying helicopters in combat, and now, you know, you're on the cusp or have played at large venues that have thousands of people. I mean, do you like just look back on this trajectory and like, holy cow, I'm like living the American life?
I would say that I'm not where I want to be, but I have been some amazing places. And I think one of the, the biggest thing, that has happened to me where I've been in the situation and thought at the same time, like, wow, when I was standing on the center stage of the Grand Ole Opry, and on September 11th in 2015, and it just seemed like it's yesterday, holy cow, and it was 2015, but I made my debut on the Grand Ole Opry, and I got to sing a song that I wrote for Aaron, my brother who was killed in action. I said to the crowd when I got on stage that, you know, in 2003, my boots were in the sand in Iraq. And in 2015, I'm standing with my boots in the center circle of the Grand Ole Opry and chasing my dreams. And if I'm not a testament that anybody can go out and chase their dreams if they work hard enough and set goals to do it, that it can happen. And, you know, it's I've been in front of, you know, 35,000 people, and I've been in front of 10 people. And I did a show in Alabama where I was in front of two people when nobody showed up. So I've seen every side of the music business, and being able to look back and know that, you know, when I was as the lead singer starting off in the club, you know, the bar scene and club scene, that I was the first one there and setting up sound and setting up the banners. And I was the last one to leave because, you know, I didn't want my guys having to work any harder than I was working to get the stuff done. And then all the way up to, until, you know, having other people do my sound checks for me and, you know, get my, the sound equipment ready and playing in front of large crowds. And, you know, it's absolutely. And anybody that's ever come out to one of my shows, my live performance shows, knows that I'm having as much fun up on stage, hopefully, as they're having, you know, down. I'm sure I'm having a ton more fun, but up on stage than they're having out in the audience. And that's, you know, kind of one of the goals of my live performance is to let them see that, you know, a normal dude can get up on stage and if you have a little bit of talent and the drive to do it and you don't quit, that you have an opportunity to be able to do something like this. So anyway, yeah.
And you touched on it in your answer about your brother and the song that you wrote for him, you know, and, you know, I think as Americans, I one of the most important American citizen is the Gold Star family. And, you know, thank you for continuing his legacy and honoring him. You know, could you share some stuff about your brother, whether it's funny or, you know, funny moments that you had with him or something that, they, you know, you would like people to remember? Because I always like to honor those people that, you know, were killed in action or, you know, serving our country.
Well, I mean, that's a really good question. I appreciate you asking that because we're actually a two-time Gold Star family. A lot of folks, I think that it's, you know, less than 1% of the United States ever serves in the military, much less is affected by a death in their family. So this percentage is significantly smaller, but to have two deaths in your family, my brother-in-law, Randy Billings, was also killed in action in 2013 on December 17th. And, you know, so our family was hit twice with a loss like that. And, you know, the one thing that I want, you know, everybody that's listening to your show to understand is that I have not changed my story from the start of my career. I've not, like I told you at the beginning, I made a promise to myself that I would honor their sacrifices. But I will say this, that, and I'm going to answer your question in kind of two ways. I'm going to talk a little bit about how I've pursued my career with that loss, but then also talk about Aaron and, you know, the kind of things that, you know, make me smile when I think about him. But,
and Randy, don't forget Randy, sorry to interrupt, but yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, obviously Aaron and Randy, I mean, you know, what makes me smile thinking about them. And, at the beginning of my career, I was on active duty for the first 7 years of doing this. So all of my shows were on the weekends and that kind of thing, because I was in a job, fortunately, where I was non-deployable. And yes, that's a long time, but I was a sole survivor at that point. And I chose to execute my sole survivor privileges. I would say privileges, but give me my brother back any day. But anyway, so I was at a non-deployable duty station, which afforded me the opportunity to do this. So my, you know, that is a chance opportunity. But then again, once I said, you know, I'll take my brother back any day over that chance opportunity. But I one of the things that I was always struggling with was I didn't want to get pigeonholed into just playing you know, military music and being that guy and having my story, my background, with my brother's, my Aaron's loss at that time, because a lot of the recent occurrences of things that have been happening have happened after Randy died. But a lot of my start happened after Aaron died. And, you know, the several years of getting before I even moved to Nashville. So I wanted to be mainstream. I wanted to be a mainstream artist because I knew that if I got pigeonholed into a specific way, kind of music to play and that kind of thing, that it makes it much more difficult to become mainstream because, you know, all that you can play, and I don't want to say all that you can play, but as a mainstream artist, I wanted to expand nationally, and I wanted to, or if not globally, to that level. I wanted to sell out stadiums with people singing my songs. And, you know, the music business is not just about, you know, patriotic songs. And as much as I love them and as much as that's who I am, I wanted to also be a mainstream artist at the time. So I really struggled with telling that story. And also, having said that, not only about telling the story, but people thinking that I was using my brother's losses, my brother's loss at the time, to advance my career. So, you know, I kept the story as something that is part of who I am, but trying to become a mainstream country music artist at the same time. Because I wanted to make sure that nobody forgot about Aaron, it caused a lot of, you know, I was torn. But anyway, so, and I always got on stage and tell Aaron's story. And that's one thing that I've always promised myself too. I said, when I get on stage, no matter the opportunity, no matter the circumstance, no matter what the show is about, if it's a benefit for cancer, Aaron was a cancer survivor, then I can talk about it. If it's a military benefit, I can talk about it. If it's a regular concert, I can talk about it. But I didn't want people to forget about him. I just didn't want that to be the focus because that wasn't who, you know, that circumstance didn't define me as a man and a country music artist. But it sure guided me in the right direction, I feel, down this path. But, you know, writing songs about Aaron and the things that we used to do as kids and how we used to, you know, how close we were together and how I followed in his footsteps and how his performance in life was a gauge for the state, you know, was a standard of my performance and what I would do with myself as an individual. If any standard of success I had was based off of what he did. He was a superhero. He was a superhero in the army. When he died, it impacted a lot of people that truly cared about it. And the crazy thing is, when I put this in this little microcosm of what our life is about and how much Aaron's loss impacted, I think about the amount of impact that each loss from a military service member impacts the communities that they're around. And it just makes me want to let people know about his story and not forget about it even more, because I know that it touches people's lives. So, I mean, you know, thinking about, when he graduated Ranger school, and I got to go up to his Ranger school and, you know, seeing him the last time when we were in Iraq together, because I, on January 2nd, Captain Kimberly Hampton was shot in 2004, was shot down in her Kiowa, and she was killed in action. And on January 4th, I flew one of her really good friends out and a few other folks to her memorial service, which was out where Aaron was. It was in his unit. And I got to see him for the memorial service. And you know, I mean, I went to shake his hand when it was time to go because he was a handshaker. And he gave me a big hug, you know, and he wanted to take a picture for posterity. And so we took, he said, he handed a picture to my crew chief because as Blackhawks, we have crew chiefs. But and he took a picture and. I never got that picture because I believe his camera was on him when he died. But he did visit me at Baghdad International a couple of times before that, and it was always a surprise. I didn't even know he was there. But, you know, the crazy thing is we have a lifetime of memories, and with exception to the time that we were separated from each other in the military. And some of the memories that stick in my mind are the last ones when we were in combat together. And, you know, it's that's what makes me smile when I think about him, because that's who he was. That's who he was, an American superhero. You don't survive Somalia and continue to serve in the military, because he was in the ambush in Mogadishu with Black Hawk Down, the actual event for Black Hawk Down. You become a cancer survivor, be non-deployable, get a waiver because your brothers are going, brothers and sisters in arms are going to combat, and your little brother's over there too. Get that waiver to be deployed because you want to be there with them and serve and fight for your country. That's what America is about. It's what it's all about. And to me, that's what makes me smile. And that's what drives me to want to be successful in this dream of mine, because he's afforded me that opportunity. And so has Randy.
Definitely, man. I know your heart. Everybody could hear your heart in that. So I just picture, a bar fight breaking out in the middle of the dance floor with people arguing where your heart is when you're sharing that story, because it seems like, Aaron is an amazing, amazing man. And, someday I'll meet him, when we're long gone. But, going back to your family, I was reading somewhere there was 11 of you.
Yeah, we had 11 of us living in a house at one time. We had a bunch. I like to call it a cornucopia of kids, because we had steps, halves, and reels. Aaron was actually my only full blood sibling out of all of my siblings, and then I have a half sister and a half brother by adoption. And then two halves. I mean, I could go through the whole thing and nobody's going to understand it, but regardless, they're all my brothers and sisters, or my brother now and sisters. I think we have five sisters. Yeah. There's five girls and two boys now, but, there were three of us, but, we had a huge house We had a huge household, and then, we lived down in Central Florida and in a little town called Floral City, and I went to school in Floral City in Inverness, in Central Florida, West Central Florida.
That has to prepare you for military life. I mean, 11 kids. I mean, I have four, and I think they're going to be well prepared for if they go in the military because of how close they are to each other and irritate each other.
Well, I have to, for our family, I think that obviously you have kid, you do the kids thing where you don't always get along with everybody. But the good thing is we had a great family. My dad did the best that he could to make sure that we were provided for, and that, we had all the things that we needed. And one of those, the biggest things was love in our household. And, Aaron was my best friend, and Steve, my oldest brother, is the second greatest man next to my dad that I've ever known in my life. And, Aaron followed in Steve's footsteps. And, my sisters are all amazing people, and they've grown up to be awesome people. And my youngest two sisters are just killing it in college right now and doing really well. And they're just they're amazing people. And, I've been fortunate to have a good family where, they're all very supportive of our military careers. They're all very supportive of, what I'm doing in the music industry as well. So, and Steve, of course, is now one of my best friends. And I can't complain. I don't have a bit of complaints.
Well, that's incredible. The love that surrounds you, and, whether it's your combat and arms type of love or your family love. The question I have is that, it seems like, with 11 kids, you got to be frugal, and, you got to figure out things. Also in the military, you kind of have to be frugal. And, some of the listeners know that, being deployed out and in combat, you get that a little bit extra pay, and you come home and there's that big check and all that. Are you a frugal guy? Once you hit it big, because I really think you will, what are some things that you took from growing up and in the military that you'll transfer to your music career? Because, sometimes the money comes in large amounts and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, I think that not being or being a little bit more experienced in life and having to pay my bills since I was 18 years old. I mean, I moved out when I was 18 and moved into the military and had to learn about paying bills and had to learn about when money came up short and, you know, had to learn about the mistakes that I made in the past as far as finances were concerned, that kind of thing. You know, they're planning for my future and planning for my wife's future. You know, those are things that, you know, because country music, your career in country music can last, you know, a year or it can last 10 years or it can, you know, last 20 years. But, and I give those three of them because you could have one song and it, and that be it. And then you could have a couple songs, but you know, the 20 year guys or some of those folks, you know, songwriters in town, your career can last for, you know, if you're, you keep writing hits, you're going to have a long career in this town. But you know, you have to plan like you're only going to have a year left and play it like you're going to have a year left. And I mean, it's essentially the way that I live my life and going after it every single day. My wife will tell you when I wake up in the morning time, I'm driving myself to be successful. And I think about what I can do that day to improve my situation and her situation, you know, and it, when it comes to music, you know, but on the personal side, because sure, what I like to, I don't drive a fancy car yet. I don't drive, you know, we don't have a gigantic house. And a lot of folks don't realize it in the country music business until you get a record deal or your songs are out there and you're playing stadiums or you're on active tour that there's, you're not living high on the hog. Most of the folks, when you come to town in Nashville, that are trying to make it until they make it, are working second and third jobs to try and pay their bills and those kind of things. So, you know, it's a tough business to be in. But fortunately I have, my military pay that comes in and my wife, is, and I'm also employed as well on top of it, but it, I have the opportunity to be able to pursue music at the same time, and do it smartly, to where it's not detrimental to us. But as far as the, you know, growing up frugal and those kind of things, I would say that when you know what you don't have, or when you know what it's, I would say that when you know what it feels like to not have things and to not have the ability to purchase something or to be able to have just the bare necessities, it teaches you about what to do, you know, with your everyday life to make sure that you don't put yourself in that situation again. Although, you know, I can't say that I've been perfect in the decisions that I've made in the past. It really puts a perspective once you get to a certain point in your life that if things start happening and our success, you know, I achieve the level of success that I want to achieve, you know, how to make sure that psychologically it doesn't go the wrong way. I will get my wife a house that is worth, or excuse me, is worth the love that, and I can't even say that's not even, because there's nothing that's worth the love that she has for me. I mean, you can't measure that. But to be able to thank her for supporting me in this dream as I've tried to make it. But having said that, I'm also not going to live outside of my means to where, you know, if the opportunities that are being presented to me in the music business go away, that we can't afford to pay for what we have, because it's not necessary. I mean, we're perfectly happy in this small house that we're at, but it would be nice to get her some nice countertops and real wood floors, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. When mama's happy, everybody's happy, right?
Absolutely.
And so the one thing that I've, you know, kind of read in books, yeah, come from a civilian background, so I just hear, you know, veterans talking or I read in books or see on documentaries is, you know, sort of the aviation community is the eyes and ears of the sky and on the ground and almost a savior, if you will, because there's some pretty bad situations that pop up that you need, you know, to infill or exfill rather quickly. And so I was looking at the kind of the parallels to music and aviation. I mean, with the veterans, I mean, it's kind of a crazy stretch to go, but being a Black Hawk pilot and going in some hairy situations, you're bringing hope and peace to that soldier or Marine or airman. And on the flip side, what I've seen with your music is it provides some sort of the same thing, like healing and a safe place, and people can kind of just get out and enjoy the music and not think about it. I know that sounds a little bit random tangent, but did you ever make that connection?
You know, I got to be honest with you. I was general support aviation when I was flying over there. So my role, there were only a couple situations that I came into that happened that where I flew into a situation, you know, a difficult situation to pull, soldiers out of. I'm not going to claim to be some combat superhero, and I say combat superhero, but there are a ton of those guys that have done so much and have encountered so much more than I ever did. And the one thing that I've never done and will never do is claim to have been in that kind of a circumstance. I mean, there were a couple of circumstances that we had. But I would say this, that, you know, after going through flight school and flying in combat, that what it's allowed afforded me afforded me the perspective that things could be a lot worse, no matter how bad they are, when I'm in the music business. And it drives me even more with even more discipline to be successful and know that regardless of, you know, a speed bump, as I call them, folks call them roadblocks, I call them speed bumps, whatever speed bump I run into, that I can make it past it or around it or some way. Because I've handled a lot more stress and I've handled a lot more multitasking situations. And I didn't even handle a fraction of what a lot of our military service members are handling. So it's all about perspective. And that's really what I would say that flying in combat and flying helicopters did for me, was provide a perspective that has, I think, contributed to the successes that I've had in the music business.
And so with the success on that, let's just go right to it. I mean, to kind of finish things off, is you released a new single called Burn. And, you know, I saw it on Facebook. I was like, okay, a couple of my military friends shared it. And I was like, you know what, I'll take a listen. And, man, I was like jamming out, you know, in the office here. So how did that come about? And you know, it seems like a great, you know, sort of what your style is, which is, you know, those anthem kind of fired up songs.
Yeah, I mean, our the show is pretty much high energy, and the things that we play are, the things that I play and what I like to write is high energy rock and stuff. We do have some emotional stuff, and we do have some, you know, some meaningful songs. So they're, a lot of the stuff that we write try and send a message. Some of them are just fun songs that we like to sing. So, but Burn turned into a pretty, I would say Burn turned into an animal of its own a couple years ago. We wrote the song, I would say 11 months before it was recorded, and it was written for my brothers and sisters in arms initially. And then during Volunteer Jam 2 years ago, which is a concert that Charlie Daniels holds every year. It's a huge concert here in Nashville. I was playing after Ted Nugent before Michael W. Smith in this concert 2 years ago. And Oz from 13 Hours, Secret Soldiers of Benghazi, and Tig, John Tigan, first one's Mark Geis, by the way. They were promoting 13 Hours, Secret Soldiers of Benghazi at that Volunteer Jam, and I got to meet Oz, and we started having a conversation about the movie. They had the trailer done, but the movie had not gone to final edit, and we talked about me potentially getting one of my songs in the movie. So Oz and I started talking about that, and then Tig, I started having conversations with John Tigan as well, and he edited the song into the trailer of the movie, and they started using it for their speaking engagements around the nation. And it took us about a year to start really getting the funding and that stuff together. But we, John Tigan started speaking with Chris Peranto, Tonto, and 13 Hours. And he came on board with it. And I got both John Tigan and Chris to to be in the music video, and John reached out to Paramount and got the authorization for us to use the trailer clips from the movie. And with both of those guys in there, I started thinking about the idea of how we were going to present this video and what we wanted to do with it. And the thing was, it was also at a pretty tumultuous time through the elections, and how we can make this video to where, because it was 13 hours and the whole Benghazi thing with Hillary and whatnot, how to not make it Hillary centric and focused on that, to where the song can make it past the election and the video can make it past the election, but still be able to do, bring to light the sacrifices that were made in Benghazi. And what I wanted to do with this one, because I wasn't able to do it in the past, was I wanted to honor both my brother's sacrifices and also the losses of those four heroes in Benghazi as well. So I think that we effectively did that. The coolest thing is, if you guys, the folks out there are listening, go to weavercountry.com and you can see the video on there. The YouTube video is up. The voice at the very beginning is my dad's voice. He's reading a quote that Aaron wrote. Aaron, who was killed in action in 2004, he wrote a quote after he survived the Somalia Somali ambush in Mogadishu. He wrote a quote in his one officer candidate school photo album. My dad is reading that quote at the very beginning of the video. And then I got my oldest brother, Steve's voice on there. He's the one that says 13 hotel inbound. And then, you know, each one of the scenes throughout, I'm wearing my brother's honor tags. And I believe you see Randy's honor tag in the scene, in my bedroom scene. And then all the way at the very end, we have a slide that that honors all of them. So please watch it all the way through. And hopefully you will see the message that we're trying to send. And just so everybody knows, there are all races, both sexes, military, police officers, as in we have and first responders. That's all, you know, or military related cast in there, because we have a military spouse, female military spouse, who is also on Naked and Afraid. Her name's Tawny Lynn, but she survived the entire episode of Naked and Afraid by herself after her partner quit with Fifth Day. But we brought her in for the video, and she's an amazing shot too. So, I mean, she's a shooter. But yeah, so I mean, and that's kind of how it all came to fruition. And then with Tonto on board and Tig really pushing this, to get it funded, we didn't get Oz in there because of scheduling issues, but it's taken on a life of its own. And, you know, I think there's a lot of stuff that's happening from it. So I'm extremely excited about it.
Man, I think I'm going to replay this interview and watch it. It was like the DVD commentary of the DVDs that you can select. You just, you know, highlighted all the things that was like, oh, okay, there's that. And that makes sense. But man, that's cool that you got everybody involved in the thing. I mean, the music video is phenomenal. There's, you know, you have the band together, and you have all the, you know, you have punching bags and guns, and, you know, it's like it's America. That's all I can say.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, the thing is, we shot the whole video in one day, and it was four different locations we shot the video at. We had a initial range scene. The Mount Juliet Police Department east of Nashville opened up their range for us, and all of the weapons are being live fired. They're not blanks. It's real live firing. We did real maneuvering out at the range. The police department was amazing for us. Then we moved over to a house and did the house scenes. And then after that, we went to the tarmac and did tarmac scenes, which you'll see at the end of the video. And then the performance scenes with the band were done in an old hangar that was on the same airport, but across the airport. So we had to completely move and do that. So the shooting started at 10 o'clock in the morning, and then we finished about 11:30 at night, but in four different locations for each one of it, each one of the scenes. And there's a lot of stuff. Every single thing that's put in that video is put there intentionally. Like, we intentionally put the cast is intentional. The jet that we actually get on in the last scene is very similar to the jet that they flew out of in Benghazi. I mean, it was the same 70 passenger Learjet, private jet, that was not American, by the way. My jet was American, but I mean, an American owned it, but the one that they had was not. But I mean, we just, it's all intentional. Everything was done with me, you know, to try and send out a great message and positive message and make it America's new fight song. We wanted people to be motivated by listening to it. So I'm glad that it motivated you.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, there's, you just go to your message board. There's tons of things, tons of feedback, all varying degrees of how you inspired people. And so I got to ask one final kind of hurrah question here is I know the kind of the thing is to name your band. Does your band have a name?
No, I'm a solo artist. I'm going like Kenny Chesney or Tim McGraw. I don't have, you know, when the Zac Brown Band came out in Nashville, everybody started after they did that calling themselves the, you know, whatever band or this band or that band, that kind of thing. No, it's just Ryan Weaver. I've spent the entire time marketing my, you know, the entire time I've been doing this to try and market my name and market a brand with my name. And I have a group of guys that have been with me for a few years now. But my band members change out because I've had musicians that have gone on to play with other artists and are touring all the time with them and that kind of thing. And guys that just, that weren't able to do the schedule or whatever it may be for whatever various reasons. We've had different band members come in and out. Although we do it, like I said, have a core. So it's not a band name. It's just Ryan Weaver.
Well, cool. I thought maybe we could, there was like some cool, like military theme or something like that. But
well, I do call my fans the Weaver Country Army. That's
there you go.
What we do. I mean, yeah, we call them the Weaver Country Army because everything is, welcome to Weaver Country, the Weaver Country website, all of that stuff. I started the Weaver Country brand, trying to start the Weaver Country brand. The W logo in my name is the Weaver Country logo. But I call the guys that play behind me are called the Weaver Country Band, but it's not the Weaver Country Band. It's Ryan Weaver. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, definitely. And that sounds the Weaver Army. I mean, that sounds like a heck of a time of a whole bunch of six packs and bonfires and all some good stuff there.
Well, the reason why, obviously, I mean, with my military background, calling my fans the Weaver Country Army, it's what I need and every artist needs out there as a group of supporters that believe in what you're doing and stand side by side and are willing to support the mission and getting things accomplished. And you know, it's my fans are some of the greatest people that you'll ever meet, and they're extremely loyal and extremely supportive and they believe in what we're doing. And if anybody out there wants to become a part of the Weaver Country Army, all you got to do is like my music.
Yeah, and I mean you're really fun to hang out with and talk with, and even I mean you have a great Facebook presence. You go out live on there all the time. So if you're looking for a new country artist, Ryan Weaver, that he is your man. Not to be a pitch man or a yes man, but I'm bought in.
Well, I appreciate that. I do.
Yeah, definitely. So well, thanks so much, Ryan, to sharing your story, your brother's story, and you know, just overall the fun times and the kind of the ups and downs of life and even a music career. So I appreciate the time that you gave us today on the Valor Podcast.
Absolutely. And like I said, if anybody out there wants to go watch the music video, it's at weavercountry.com. And please do me a huge favor, share the video, leave a comment, leave a thumbs up. I've gotten positive and negative comments on there as well. And you know, I try to respond to each one of those comments. They've been getting a little bit coming in a little bit fast for me to be able to respond. But I try and at least like them. But every comment is appreciated, and every share is appreciated, because you never know. There's one person out there that could absolutely change my life, because I'm not on a record label yet. Everybody knows in this business and in the business of music, there are two things that really make you successful other than your talent. And it's who you know and how much money you have, but it's just like marketing any other product. So anybody out there wants to share it and get this to anybody that they know that would be, that would like it, sharing is caring.
I like it, Ryan, the hustle at the end, the plugs. I love it. You're going to go places. So, well,
I appreciate it, man.
That concludes our show. So thanks for listening to the Valor Podcast. Make sure to like us on Facebook, and you can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play and or any other podcast management app. Visit our webpage at thevalorpodcast.com. That is thevalorpodcast.com. Finally, find your mission. There are many veteran organizations, nonprofits, and veterans needing your help. I promise you'll make some great friends and some great memories, and who knows, maybe even bump into a country music star. So we're going to let Ryan take us on out with Burn, and thanks again, and have a great week.
When you dare to take a breath, don't care about no medals on your chest. You're a steely-eyed killer shadow in the night. You were born to fight. You gotta light 'em up before they burn it down. Better dig deep and put 'em in the ground. Hellbound, save us all before they burn it down. It's a long way to home, but you won't take the hard road all alone. Just look to your left and look to your right. Before they burn it down, better dig deep and put them in the ground. Blood on their hands, they're hellbound. Save us all. Before they burn it down, better dig deep and put them in the ground. But on their hands, yeah, they're hellbound. Save us all. Burn it down.